This is Casey Currents. I'm Susan Wilson.
And I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. For 18 years, the old YMCA building was an eyesore at the entrance of the 18th and Vine District. But over the last few years, the facade has been restored and the windows replaced. And on the south wall, a giant mural has gone up of the legendary baseball player, coach, and keeper of the Negro League's flame, Buck O'Neill. The building belongs to the Negro League's Baseball Museum. Officials there have long planned to turn it into the Buck O'Neill Education and Research Center. They got a step closer to that goal this week when the city council voted to allocate $500,000 to help restore the inside of the building. To find out more about the history of the building and the plans for the old Y, I went down to the Negro League's museum this week to meet with President Bob Kendrick.
Andrew Root Foster led a contingent of 8 independent black baseball team owners into Kansas City, and they met at the old Paseo YMCA. Out of that meeting came the birthplace of the Negro National League, the first successful organized black baseball league. The leagues would go on to operate for 40 years and give, obviously, a playing ground for the best African-American and Hispanic baseball players to showcase their world-class skills, but it would also have a tremendous impact in the social advancement of our country. And so that historic landmark was the site of that meeting. And so many other legendary African-Americans stayed at the Paseo YMCA. It was the only place where black folks could swim at that time and do these other recreational kinds of things. And so that building has great historical significance, even beyond the fact that the Negro Leagues were established there.
And that happened in 1920?
Yes, the leagues were formed in 1920. The building opened in 1914. So it is one of the oldest African-American YMCAs in the country. Not the oldest, but certainly one of the oldest African-American YMCAs in the country. And when we get it functioning again, it will be one of only, I think, 2 of those old African-American YMCAs that will actually be functioning.
And the YMCA, was that unusual for them to start both black and white institutions?
Most of those white YMCAs didn't allow blacks, you know, to utilize them. And so I think there was great sentiment that there was need for a facility that would allow African Americans to have an opportunity to recreate. And so that's how these emergences of these YMCAs started to come about.
And when did it close, the one on the Paseo here?
This one has been closed since probably the early mid-70s. It's been unoccupied, and so it was boarded up and abandoned, really. And it was an eyesore to the community, harboring illicit activity. Vagrants were living in the building, and, you know, and they were trying to do things to stay warm and started fires in the building and this kind of thing. And so when we took on this project, we also cleaned the building up. And so Ollie Gates, who has become kind of the champion of this project, the Buck O'Neill Center.
That's, of course, Ollie Gates of Gates Barbecue, yes. Kansas City's barbecue magnate.
Absolutely. The barbecue baron, as I like to refer to him, has taken the leadership on this project, got that building cleaned up, got rid of a lot of the blight that was in and around the building. And so now we have a beautiful shell. But it is something that the community has embraced and responded to because they're taking pride in the fact that this old abandoned building that was such an eyesore has become this beautiful swan now. And even though it's just a beautiful shell, it has totally transformed the community.
How would just having the outside of the building transform the community?
Well, we got rid of that blight. You know, you got rid of that blight and you got rid of the stuff that was going on in and around that building. And in the process, what we saw was that the community took great ownership in this project. They were so excited to see that all eradicated. And so now as you drive down the Paseo, if you start coming off of I-29 south at the Paseo and you drive south on the Paseo, it is absolutely beautiful. It is a beautiful boulevard. The only eyesore on the boulevard was the old YMCA building. And so now that we've alleviated that and created this and preserved the building, you know, there's no further risk of structural deterioration of the building. So really, it wasn't a matter of if the building was going to fall in at some point in time. It was just a matter of when.
Who was the first person to come up with the idea that that building should be renovated and turned into some kind of education or museum center?
Well, it had been on the docket for the museum for quite some time. We probably started talking about that in the late 1990s, early 2000s, about the possibility of the museum taking ownership of the Pacelle YMCA and converting it into an education and research center in memory, well, at that time, in celebration of Buck O'Neill, who was still with us at that time, and Landon Rowland, who has been a longtime board member of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum and a tremendous friend of the museum, purchased that building and donated it back to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum so that we could start the development efforts to create an expansion of our great museum.
And what is an education and research center? What does that mean?
Well, it means several things for the museum. You know, one of the things is that we've outgrown our current home. So we have this wonderful attraction. The Buck O'Neill Education and Research Center gives us an opportunity to function more now as an institution with an attraction. So we can start to look at Negro Leagues baseball in much greater depth, a facility where people can come in and learn in greater detail this history, whether they are students, whether they are scholars, if you're writing your thesis or what have you. So the goal is to, at some point in time, house the entire archives of those great black papers, which became the voice of the Negro Leagues, a place where those who are researching Negro Leagues can have their papers and books. So we have a one-stop shop that we essentially have a central repository for Negro Leagues history, but it also creates an opportunity for us for expanded exhibits because there's still a lot of stories that need to be told. We're looking at cutting-edge technology and curriculum-based opportunities that address the math and science of baseball and administrative office space. So there are a number of things that this building will give us the opportunity to do as we look at the next two decades of growth for the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum and beyond.
And has that idea changed over the years since you first thought about what it would be?
Yeah, and it'll probably continue to change because we want to make sure, number one, that we maximize every nook and cranny in that building to meet our specific needs. But, you know, when we first started the project, it was about a $15 million project because it was going to include an annex that had some other things that were really needed at that time. But, you know, the economy really started to suffer, and it was going to be too difficult for us to go out and try and conduct a $15, $17 million capital campaign in this climate. And so we backed off of some of those plans. And again, with the help of Mr. Gates, who obviously is a great businessman in his own right, great civic leader, and very philanthropic in his own rights, he's been able to kind of lean on his friends who have helped move this project along. And so we were able to get a lot of work done with a little resources. And so we've done it phase by phase.
Tell me what Buck O'Neill's plans were for the building.
Well, it wasn't as much as him having a plan per se, more so of him having a desire to educate young people. You know, Buck, who I call one of the greatest teachers ever, even though he wasn't a teacher by trade, you know, here's the grandson of a slave who lived through some incredible circumstances, who never harbored any bitterness, who never harbored any ill will toward any human being, who taught us all about living and loving, and taught us about the heroes of the Negro Leagues, taught us how to lose with dignity and grace. You know, he taught all of these wonderful things that continue to resonate. And so, but at the core of that for him was education. You know, he would oftentimes say that education is like a garden growing in your mind. And for that garden to grow, you got to water it. And so the Education and Research Center was going to become this area that waters those young minds as we teach them about not only the virtues and history of the Negro Leagues, but in doing so, help them prepare better for life. And I think there are things that transcend from the Negro Leagues that become wonderful teaching tools, you know, because the story itself was never a woe is mine kind of story. This weren't about men who were out there crying about social injustice. They went out and did something about it. And those are lessons that never go out of style. They will transcend time. They transcend race and gender. And so he felt compelled that this story could be used as a teaching tool. Because with young people, you have to make it relevant to what is happening in their world today. They're very savvy. You know, they'll say that was then, this is now. So how does this apply to me? And we have to be able to address that. And we needed the space in order to do that, to continue to create innovative programs that stem from the teachings of the Negro Leagues.
The great disappointment when he was not inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame, that was a setback for the research center too.
Yes, it was. And, you know, it. Here we are almost 7 years, you know, since Buck's death and that dreadful decision that happened in February of 2006. And, you know, we were all prepared. You know, everybody thought that this thing was a shoe-in, that Buck is going to get in. And so we had prepared, you know, to launch this capital campaign in around Buck's Hall of Fame induction and his whole nine yards. And something crazy along the way happened, and it didn't happen. And so it did set the project back. And, you know, and it was devastating to all of us who love Buck. And obviously Buck handled it with such grace, class, and dignity, but he was certainly disappointed. You know, the Hall of Fame represents the pinnacle for any athlete. And I think at that time, Buck knew that he was sick. And this was going to be the swan song for Buck. And this was going to be the way that he set up his museum for continued prosperity and continued growth. And so there was a great level of disappointment for him. He didn't show it publicly, didn't display it publicly. He took it like a man, you know. And as a result, we all learned a valuable lesson from Buck on how to handle disappointment. And so, but yeah, it did set the project back. And so we had to regroup. And we did that, you know, while he was still with us. But then in October of that same year, he passed away. And we knew that Buck's death would be the most significant thing to ever happen to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. And we were right. You know, it was tremendous to lose your both spiritual leader, you know, the guy who could command the attention of a lot of people. He was the guy that could pick up the phone and call the commissioner of baseball, and the commissioner is going to take his call. You know, so, and to use a probably a bad baseball analogy, losing Buck was like losing your power hitter. You know, you can't take your power hitter out of your lineup and think that you're going to be as offensively potent as you were when he was in your lineup. So now you have to find ways to manufacture runs. And that's what we saw ourselves in a position to have to do after we lost Buck. But no one was expecting to lose Buck. You know, it's rare that a 94-year-old man dies and you're surprised. But Buck O'Neill had defied age for so long. He was so charismatic, so gregarious and vivacious that you just didn't think he was ever going to die. If anybody was going to make 100 or better, it was going to be Buck. And so I think we were all caught off guard by his untimely death, and so it kind of set the wheels spinning for us. And so we had to regroup.
And how did the fundraising go? This week, the city council approved $500,000 for the research center. You have raised a total of $3 million, is that
over
right?
Over time. And, you know, yeah, this week we were in front of the Finance Committee of the City Council endorsing an ordinance that had been presented to put $500,000 dedicated to this project to advance the continued development of the Buck O'Neill Education and Research Center. And it is my understanding that on Thursday of this week, the City Council also unanimously approved these funds. And so that is a ringing endorsement for this project, which we hope will resonate with the funding community as we continue to try and leverage this particular gift to raise the dollars necessary to complete this project. But we have great aspiration that we will have at least two floors of this building functioning by fall of next year. And when I say functioning, where the public can actually come into it and feel it and embrace it and have activity going on in that building. And of course, 2014 marks the 100th anniversary of the opening of the Paseo YMC. So there's great synergy and great timing in trying to meet that goal.
Now, I want to ask you about the 18th and Vine District in general. There's been this perennial question about how to make the entire district more of an attraction, bring more businesses, have more places for people to go besides the two museums here. Where do you feel the district is at now?
Well, I think the district is moving in the right direction. You know, from a commercial development standpoint, I don't think the commercial stuff has happened as fast as we would all like. I think we were all hoping that we'd have a plethora of other commercial opportunities. But the district, I think, is doing well. And it's all about patience. This wasn't the easiest sale to attract commercial developers to come into. But, you know, for a community to sustain itself, you have to have the basic kinds of things. You need a grocery store. You need banking institutions. You need dry cleaners. You need drug stores. Because this is indeed a community. You know, it's not just an entertainment district. And I think sometimes that gets lost in the equation. People are living here. There are children who are growing up here. There are families who have made 18th and Vine their home. And so you need those sustaining kinds of mechanisms in place. And for me, again, another bad analogy, but it's almost like which comes first, the chicken or the egg. And so you needed density. You know, you needed that in order to start to attract these folks to come in and anchor and set up here. I think we've created that density now. You know, the housing aspect of this has been way ahead of pace. You know, and it's such a great district. People are living here. The great activity here, great culture. We have this cultural campus with these two museums and the Black Archives. And now we're trying to do our part with the redevelopment of the Pacelle YMCA and the Buck O'Neill Education and Research Center, which in some ways will start now development moving west of the historic 18th and Vine district. There's no reason that we can't create enough synergy that 18th and Vine and the Crossroads district should eventually connect. And so, you know, again, that is certainly long term, but I feel very good about the work that has gone on here at 18th and Vine and the direction that 18th and Vine is going.
Well, Bob Kendrick, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me again.
Bob Kendrick is president of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum.
If you can't listen to all of Casey Kearns today, catch what you missed online in our audio archives. And we've got a podcast. Find us on iTunes.